the headlines this hour. President Raisi says Iran will protect the rights of its people to the very end as high-stakes diplomacy continues to revive the 2015 nuclear deal. Russia says it has destroyed an ammunition depot in Ukraine's Odessa region that contained missiles for U.S.-made HIMARS and other Western anti-aircraft systems. And Somali officials raised the death toll from a 30-hour hotel siege by al-Shabaab terrorists in Mogadishu to 21, with scores more wounded. Thanks for joining us. Iran says it will not give up the rights of the nation in any talks or meetings amid a flurry of diplomatic exchanges to revive the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA. The Iranian president says that his administration will powerfully continue efforts to resolve the country's problems and to push for its progress. Ebrahim Raisi vowed not to tie people's livelihoods to any foreign factor. He said that Iran has secured a considerable part of its demands from some other countries. Comments come amid intense speculation about the fate of the JCPOA after Iran provided its written response to the most recent EU proposal to salvage the pact. Tehran says Washington must now show flexibility and take a realistic approach if it really wants a final agreement. Nearly 80 family members of 9/11 victims have urged U.S. President Joe Biden to reverse his order and to send back billions in Afghanistan's frozen assets. Washington has been keeping the Afghans' assets despite a deepening economic crisis in that country. Rahmatullah Bhagwan has more from Kabul.
1 year ago, following the Taliban's return to power in Afghanistan, the U.S. froze about $7 billion in Afghan central bank assets and cut major international funding to the country. The measure, which pushed the Afghan economy to collapse, faced backlash from inside and outside Afghanistan. In February, U.S. President Joe Biden signed an order, splitting Afghan assets between relief aid to Afghanistan and 9/11 victims. On Tuesday, nearly 80 family members of 9/11 victims sent a letter to Biden, saying the money belongs to Afghans, urging him to release the money without delay.
In fact, no law, regulation, or moral orders permits a country to freeze the reserves of another country and create a situation where the owners of the money face economic suffering. The money, which is blocked by the U.S. and its allies, belongs to the people of Afghanistan. As I mentioned, based on the international laws and moral norms, the U.S. doesn't have the right to decide on Afghan assets, be it keeping the money or splitting it between 9/11 victims.
In Afghanistan, more and more people are going without job and cash, as the U.S. sanctions have paralyzed the public economy. Frustrated Afghans call for the release of Afghanistan's central bank assets and solidarity from the international community.
The U.S. should solve its disputes with the Taliban. Why is it punishing poor Afghan people? Both sides have had their battle and agreement. Today, the U.S. is stealing that piece of bread of ours which was supposed to fill the stomachs of our children. Why is the U.S. creating this dire situation which everyone is hungry and poor? In addition, we have been the victims of the terrorism and we can't pay the price for 9/11.
Majority of the Afghan population is in need of humanitarian assistance. More than half of Afghans are going hungry and more than 1 million children are severely malnourished. The humanitarian situation in Afghanistan is getting worse day by day, and the country needs its frozen funds for an economic recovery. It remains to be seen when Washington opens its eyes on the miseries of Afghans and returns their money. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The Palestinian president slams Israel's forced closure of seven Palestinian non-governmental organizations in the occupied West Bank. Mahmoud Abbas said the regime's unilateral actions are unacceptable and in violation of international law. While he hailed the international consensus condemning the closures, Abbas noted practical international measures are needed to stop Israel's aggressive policies. The Palestinian president added that the NGOs will continue to expose the Israeli crimes. irrespective of the shutdown order. On Friday, 9 European countries, including France and Germany, said that they were deeply concerned by the Israeli move. The UN has also urged the regime to allow the NGOs to continue working.
The Israeli military shut down 7 Palestinian non-governmental civil society and human rights organizations in the occupied West Bank. Early on Thursday, the Israeli military raided occupied Ramallah and broke into the offices of the organizations. The offices were ransacked and their equipment confiscated. Doors were welded shut with an Israeli military order posted on them declaring the organizations unlawful. The groups have decried the move as politically motivated and baseless.
They are targeting by the seven organizations. They are targeting the civil society sector in Palestine and the human rights sector in general. So the message was any organization talked about expose the Israeli policy, talked about the Israeli crimes will be targeted and will be silent. Again, the message also for the international organizations and, of course, also for the EU states, those who are rejected the Israeli allegation against the organizations. This is a message that Israel is above the law.
Israel has outlawed 6 of these NGOs, which were labeled as terrorist organizations in October 2021, and accused them of funneling donor aid to militants and had ties to the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, a Palestinian left-wing movement. The organizations that have been outlawed by Israel are Ad-Damir and Al-Haq, which document human rights violations, and the Union of Palestinian Women's Committees, Bissan Center for Research, DCI, Defense for Children International Palestine, as well as the Union of Agricultural Work Committees. The 7th organization was the Union of Health Work Committees.
We will continue our work. Work in this field, it's not a job. It's not a job. The Israelis continue their atrocities, their oppression against us, against the rest of the civil society organizations here. But this will not stop us, and this will not push us back, and we will not give up, and we will continue. We know that we pay price, maybe personal price, maybe different kind of a price, but we are ready to defend, to fight for the principles that we do believe.
The United Nations Human Rights Office has meanwhile expressed alarm at Israel's arbitrary closure of organizations and called on Israel to immediately reverse these decisions, reiterating the High Commissioner's call to revoke the designations of the organizations as terrorist and unlawful. The Israeli regime has added to its illegal practices which aim to silence the Palestinian people. Today, not only does it continue to suppress Palestinian people, the regime also quells these organizations and human rights advocates. Mona Kandil, Occupied Ramallah.
Moving on to Ukraine, where the war is now approaching its 7th month. Moscow says it has destroyed an ammunition depot in Odessa region. The defense ministry says contained missiles for U.S.-made HIMARS rocket and other Western-made anti-aircraft systems. According to the ministry, sea-based caliber missiles were used in the attack. Ukrainian authorities say the 5 missiles were fired from the Black Sea overnight, adding that air defenses shut down 2 of them, while the other 3 hit an agricultural facility. Moscow also says 2 M777 howitzers were destroyed in the southern region of Kherson, and a fuel depot was struck in the Zaporizhzhia region. Meanwhile, Ukrainian authorities say that the city of Nikopol, near the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, was shelled overnight. The process of de-dollarization is something Russia has been working on for years due to U.S. sanctions imposed on the country. Russia is now speeding up the process because of the war in Ukraine. Moscow is moving away from the euro also, and that's another case of the U.S. and Europe shooting themselves in the foot by not opting to push for diplomacy.
The fall of the U.S. dollar is happening, 1 cent at a time. While there's a decline in the U.S. standing as a superpower, there's also the harsh reality that the U.S. is facing, the decline of the U.S. dollar. All the signs are there. shares of the US dollar in reserves held by central banks has fallen to its lowest level. The US, the most indebted nation ever, also has a sovereign debt crisis, another sign that it may be heading to a dollar collapse. The US use of the dollar as a weapon, like sanctions, has made other countries resist using it in their trade. Yet countries like Iran, Russia, and China are moving towards the elimination of the dollar altogether. This is why Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister Alexander Pankin has said, against the growing geopolitical pressure from the collective West, the only way to guarantee stable trade, economic and investment ties between Russia and its partners is to avoid the dollar and the euro and switch to settlements in acceptable alternatives, primarily in national currencies. His reference to the growing geopolitical pressure from the West are sanctions from the US and its European allies due to Russia's special military operation in Ukraine. But these sanctions have been heavily used against Russia starting from the year 2014.
When it comes to trade, if you want to move away from the dollar, as we're supposed to say, Russian ruble, it's going to be very difficult indeed. Of course, you can trade in ruble and other currencies, but the key thing is you need them to be liquid. That's easy to buy and sell and a decent size. And also the margin, or the difference in the buying and selling costs, all of this can make it more difficult. Therefore, if you're trading in dollars, the price is normally going to be sharper. If you're trading in, say, another currency, well, you may find it's illiquid, as barren as a desert, and not be able to complete your trade.
Russia's de-dollarization efforts are matched by other countries that have been a victim of U.S. sanctions, like Iran and China. Russia has said that would take off in countries belonging to trade blocs, such as BRICS. Trade in national currencies would replace the dollar, even though the process might be slow in its execution. And for payment transfers, Russia has adopted its own financial payment mechanism to replace SWIFT.
The de-dollarization move was thrown into fast gear when the U.S. Treasury Department decided to confiscate Russia's dollar foreign exchange reserves. This made other countries think twice about holding their reserves in the dollar currency. After all, these countries have concluded that their country could be the next if it does not abide by U.S. foreign policy. They can be a victim of secondary sanctions at a minimum. Therefore, it was a natural progression for countries like Russia, China, and Iran to trade with their own national currencies. Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister Alexander Pankin has said that mechanisms for settlement in national currencies other than Western ones have been successfully created with a number of nations, and the possibility of paying in rubles for certain categories of Russian export goods, including energy and food products, has been set up.
It's going to be interesting to see actually what happens with the dollar now, because I suspect there's going to be quite a lot of weakness of it. Why? Well, because the global economy is slowing down for one key reason. But nonetheless, the dollar is normally seen as a safer haven than other currencies. So what you'll find is actually people will go to the dollar in times of emergency because they know it's actually got depth, liquidity, and obviously the treasury standing behind it. If you were using another currency, those things would not be as strong and it would not be as straightforward to be able to run a business like that.
The BRICS, SCO and other international platforms have intensified their multilateral discourse on the subject. And this is very significant since the US has fallen out of favor with many countries and are gravitating eastward or away from the US. Take the case of Brazil. Presidential candidate Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has recommended using a Latin American currency to be free of the US dollar. Lula has pledged many things that don't involve the US and the dollar, such as strengthening its relations with Latin America, vowing to revive the BRICS system, integrating Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa in an independent economic architecture to challenge Western financial hegemony. The BRICS have also been discussing the development of a BRICS pay multilateral wallet and currency.
The Somali military has ended the Al-Shabaab terrorist siege on a hotel in the capital Mogadishu. The 30-hour crisis came to an end after forces pounded the Hyatt Hotel with heavy weapons late Saturday to eliminate the gunmen. Al-Shabaab launched a gun and bomb attack on the building on Friday. It killed at least 21 people and injured dozens more. Security sources say the building is yet to be cleared of possible explosives. The attack is the biggest in Mogadishu since Somalia's new government took office in June. Al-Shabaab is an affiliate of Al-Qaeda and controls much of southern and central Somalia. It has engaged in a long-running conflict with the federal government. The UK government is facing calls to act after a PhD student at Leeds University was jailed in Saudi Arabia for using Twitter. The opposition Labour lawmaker Hilary Benn has called on Foreign Minister Liz Truss to press for the release of 34-year-old Saudi Salma al-Shahab. Benn has said that Britain has a duty to speak out over the case of the mother of two. Al-Shahab was detained last year after returning to Saudi Arabia to visit her family. Earlier this week, an appeals court sentenced her to 34 years in prison, followed by a 34-year travel ban for tweeting on women's rights and retweeting posts calling for the release of imprisoned activists in Saudi Arabia. The ruling has drawn growing global condemnation, with activists calling it outrageous and shocking. Al-Shahab says that she has been subjected to abuse and harassment during her interrogations. Saudi Arabia has been under fire internationally for its poor human rights record, but earlier this year, Truss declined to criticize the kingdom, saying that Riyadh is an important partner of the UK. With that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
When your horse returns to Alcamp Riderless.
أزور سيدي ومولاي ومعتمدي ورجاي.
The ocean of dua.
الإمام الحسين عليه السلام زيارة.
fend for ourselves. Hussein, Hussein, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us.
Bari'tu ila Allah wa ilaykum minhum wa min ashya'ihim wa atba'ihim wa awliya'ihim ya Aba Abdullah inni silmun liman salamakum. حرب لمن حاربكم إلى يوم القيامة.
As you were previously with us, brothers and sisters, we were discussing this part of Ziyarat al-Ashura. يا أبا عبد الله إني سلم لمن سالمكم وحرب لمن حاربكم إلى يوم القيامة. أو أبا عبد الله, I am at peace with he who is at peace with you, and at war with he who is at war with you till the day of resurrection. We moved to change the horizons of the meaning we were discussing, and we started discussing about human soul or nafs. We said one of the evil forces that we need to be at war with is ourself, our human soul. The one who seasons his soul will be able to express his hatred and dislike against the enemies of the Ahlul Bayt. We also had a look at some of the traditions from the Ahlul Bayt, introducing forces for the human soul named as Jaysh or Jayshu Shaytani wa Nafs. On the far side of this story is the Aql or the intellect, and Aql is also owner of Jaysh and some soldiers that is referred to in our traditions as Junudul Aql. And the one who wants to be with Imam Hussein alayhi salam fil Jannah in his station in Jannah needs to know the exact enemies of Ahlul Bayt and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, the first of which is human soul and nafs. So we concluded anyway that we have to start from ourselves. As long as we are attached to these mundane desires, we cannot undertake jihad. And we cannot step in the path of the Almighty Allah. And this is exactly the case with what we see happened with Imam Hussein alayhi salam. The episode of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, it is a combination of these two dimensions. There are two wars going on. One, a holy war against the apparent enemy, as well as a holy war against the inner self. And these two, in the plains of Karbala, were manifested in their highest degree. So the event of Ashura is a great movement of struggle in both the war fronts, the front of fighting against the outer and external enemy, which was the very corrupt apparatus of the caliphate of the time, and the front of the inner self, which had moved towards inner corruption in the society of that time in general.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies. It clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is do not allow tyranny, do not allow evil doing, do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah, he appreciates him, he understands his dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we are talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So what we see in the plains of Karbala is apparently a war. But this is a scenario, a war that is extremely difficult. It is where sacrificing faithful men and women go after Hussein alayhi salam. I mean, these companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, how could they be the followers of Imam if they are not ready, if they have not prepared their souls, if they have not fought with their own enemies, their own souls, the world and what it contains, its pleasures, its beauties, against the sense of responsibility, fall down before their eyes? These are such companions. They are human beings, but in their hearts, it is spirituality that has overcome the soldiers of Satan. That same soldiers that we discussed earlier, the soldiers of intellect and ignorance. And this is one secret that these companions have become immortal in history. This is what the greater jihad does to people, to the victorious ones in this fight. And this is when we come back to what we said earlier, what we concluded earlier, and started this aspect of discussion with. We had a look at some of the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, that they said, until we do not reform ourselves, it is nearly impossible to reform our environment, or so-called our country. So, starting with your own soul and nafs has this advantage of being victorious in this world as well as hereafter. This is what we understand from the plains of Karbala. Those who were together with Imam Hussein alayhi salam, those were the tough ones that somehow subdued their own souls. And that is how they could gain victory over their enemies, both inner enemies and external enemies. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
أنت الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين.
In the limelight.
Business Roundtable aims to weaken efforts that would enable investors to hold companies accountable for their climate promises. We now present you an article written by Adam Lowenstein under the heading, How a Top US Business Lobby Promised Climate Action but Worked to Block Efforts. Three years ago, in a statement, America's most powerful and politically connected corporations promised to protect the environment by embracing sustainable practices across American businesses. The statement on the purpose of a corporation came from the Business Roundtable, an influential Washington, D.C. lobbying group whose 200-plus members include the chief executives of some of the world's biggest companies, such as Apple, Pepsi, Walmart, and Google. Now, on the statement's third anniversary, the Business Roundtable and its member CEOs continue to issue earnest statements about the climate crisis. But the organization is also working diligently and spending liberally to weaken efforts that would enable investors to hold companies accountable for their climate promises. An analysis by The Guardian found the lobby group has worked hard to protect the status quo in which corporations generate goodwill and positive public relations by publishing bold climate goals with little fear of being held accountable or legally liable for achieving those goals. Can choose to selectively disclose certain parts of their carbon footprint or none at all. Are not required to reveal the greenhouse gas emissions generated throughout their supply chains, which for most companies make up the majority of their emissions. Make high-profile pledges to fight climate change while paying to maintain memberships in the Business Roundtable and other trade associations that spend millions of dollars to lobby governments against meaningful climate action. In public, the Business Roundtable's leaders are still committed to change. Doug McMillon, the chief executive officer of Walmart and previous chair of the Business Roundtable, has claimed the climate crisis one of the greatest challenges facing the planet today. In a statement on the group's website, Mary Barra, the chief executive officer of General Motors and the Roundtable's current chair, declared that we must act to tackle climate change. Johnson Controls Chief Executive Officer George Oliver, in a video published by the Business Roundtable in January, said the challenge isn't a lack of business commitment, adding, "What we need is to be aligned with the public sector to make sure that we've got the proper policies in place that will enable us to do what we do so well." Yet, when the US government has tried to put the proper policies in place, the Business Roundtable has worked to undermine those efforts. In 2021, the organization spent millions of dollars to stop the Biden administration's Build Back Better agenda, which included significant efforts to purportedly reduce carbon emissions and promote clean energy. And this year, after the US Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, proposed a long-anticipated rule that would require publicly held companies to disclose their carbon emissions and the risk that climate change poses to their business models, the Business Roundtable declared its opposition to central aspects of the Securities and Exchange Commission proposal, including provisions that experts say are vital for the rule to give investors comparable and consistent information about corporations' climate risks. Before releasing the proposed rules in March, the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, had asked the public what such rules might look like. In its response, the Business Roundtable acknowledged that climate challenges are creating growing risks in many parts of the economy and deemed it appropriate for the Securities and Exchange Council, SEC, to regulate climate disclosures. The group admitted that the present system of corporate climate reporting, in which some companies issue voluntary climate-related disclosures, has proven inadequate. But when the Securities and Exchange Council, SEC, shifted from requesting voluntary input to proposing mandatory requirements for climate disclosures, the organization appeared to change its tune. In a 17-page letter, the chief executive officer, Lobby, announced its opposition to the proposal and asked the commission to revise and repropose the rule. In an email to The Guardian, the Business Roundtable denied that its perspective had changed. It claimed, "Business Roundtable members are committed to combating climate change and are supportive of a rulemaking." The group said, "Our goal is for a pragmatic, attainable and successful rule," adding, "Our members believe it is worth the extra time on the front end to repropose the rule." According to meeting memoranda published by the Securities and Exchange Council, SEC, since April of 2021, the Business Roundtable has met at least three times with the SEC about climate disclosures. According to reports compiled by Open Secrets, in the first half of this year, the group sent more than $9.1 million lobbying the federal government directly. In its public disclosures, the roundtable reported lobbying Congress, the White House, and the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Council, about the climate disclosure proposal. In an email, the Business Roundtable said it met with the Securities and Exchange Council, SEC, to directly communicate their concerns and shared their point of view with members of Congress and administration officials. Despite asking for a new and thus delayed proposal, the organization's own members continue to assure the public that they see the climate crisis as an urgent challenge. Cummins, chief executive officer and Business Roundtable member Tom Linebarger, said in the organization's January climate video, "We're out of time. We're getting ready to do things. And the problem is that we have to move now." But now, it seems, does not mean now. One provision the Business Roundtable has rejected as unworkable is a requirement for companies to measure and report the greenhouse gas emissions generated by their suppliers and customers throughout their supply chains, or what are known as Scope 3 emissions. The provision would apply only to companies that have published emission targets that include Scope 3, or for which supply chain emissions are considered material. Scope 3 includes all greenhouse gas emissions that companies neither generate directly, Scope 1, nor purchase for their own energy needs, Scope 2, which means everything from the raw materials that go into creating a product to the transportation that delivers that product to a consumer. For most companies, Scope 3 emissions represents the majority of their carbon output. As Adisu, Lashitu, a fellow at Brookings Institution, has pointed out more than three-quarters of Amazon's 2021 emissions were considered Scope 3. The Business Roundtable supports mandating Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions disclosures, and many companies already report them, in part because these direct emissions are easier to calculate and easier to reduce, sometimes through the purchase of dubious carbon offsets. In its comments to the Securities and Exchange Council, SEC, the Business Roundtable called the proposal to require companies to measure and report Scope 3 emissions overly burdensome, because many companies still have limited systems in place to identify and disclose Scope 3 emissions, and some aspects of reporting value chain emissions remain challenging. But Alison Heron-Lee, the former acting chair and commissioner of the Securities and Exchange Council, SEC, told The Guardian, "If you don't have Scope 3 as a requirement, then what you have effectively done is cut out most of the emissions from the top emitting industries. With emissions arguably being the most important item of disclosure for investors, how is a rule without Scope 3 going to achieve what investors need?" The Business Roundtable said in an email, "There is an inherent degree of uncertainty in some of the data the proposal would require companies to disclose, and much of it is largely outside of their control." A number of experts familiar with the Securities and Exchange Council's climate disclosure rulemaking acknowledge that tracking and reporting Scope 3 emissions could indeed be difficult for some companies, or at least more difficult than not doing so. But they suggested that the more fundamental question was not whether complying with the SEC's rules would be more difficult than doing nothing, but rather, if doing so would provide investors with information that they have requested, and that would help them make more informed investment decisions. This argument would appear to align with the stated position of the Business Roundtable, which has repeatedly expressed its support for market-based efforts to address climate change, a view it reiterated in its comments to the Securities and Exchange Council, SEC. George S. Georgiev, a professor at Emory University in Georgia and an expert on securities law, told The Guardian, "Information is the lifeblood of the capital markets, and capital markets are a central institution of a capitalist market economy," adding, "Climate-related financial information is demanded by investors, not by environmentalists." In its comments, the Business Roundtable said that its member companies had already set a high bar for voluntary environmental, social and governance disclosures, or ESG disclosures, and that a voluntary approach to climate reporting was already providing more valuable information for investors. But many investors, analysts and academics, voters and experts, even companies themselves, disagree. Emory University's Georgiev said, "There is near universal agreement among scholars that voluntary disclosure rules alone are not sufficient. The same logic applies to climate rules."
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
If others could understand or be made to understand the reason for the morning sessions and why so much value is placed on these special tears that are shed and their reward with Allah, they surely would not call us the nation of tears. Instead, they would call us the nation of epic. If people could understand why Hazrat Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him, lost all that was his in the Ashura at Karbala, and while living under a powerful regime produced such penetrating and prayers that incite and make people rise to action, they would not then question the prayers.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. In the name of Allah, who's the kindest, who's the most loving on the face of this planet, and not only on the face of this planet, but in the both worlds. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Spring of Truth, where we try to highlight some of the wise sayings of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, the founder of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. In this program, I have chosen a specific statement of his, which deals with how important it is not to reveal other people's secrets to other people. He says, revealing the people's secrets, no matter what they may be, is contrary to Islam. Well, there is a famous saying that as long as you haven't shared your secret with other people, your secret is within your control, it's within your dominance, it's within your power. But once you tell your secret to other people, it is no longer within your power, within your dominance. And then you have to run after the person whom, you know, you've shared your secret with. And, you know, it just, you're all constantly worried that, you know, oh my God, what if this person tells some other people, you know, the secret that I've shared with him? And you're constantly worried and anxious.
صلي على طه النبي
So first of all, try not to share your secrets with other people. And, you know, don't expose the things that are really important to you, that are a secret to you, to other people. Let them be in your own heart. But if someone shares a secret with you, try to be trustworthy. Try, you know, do your best to keep that secret within the lock of your heart and do not reveal it to anyone else. Our prophet, as a matter of fact, was the most trusted person to the extent that people would actually, they would leave their valuable things with him. They would share so many of their secrets with him. And, like when they wanted to go on a travel, they would entrust to his trust so many valuable things that they had. And that is why he was called Al-Amin, which means the trustworthy person. And this brings us to another episode of the program, Spring of Truth. Thank you very much for being with us and listening to us. May God bless you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.